Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films Oppenheimer and Barbie.
I'd like to talk about two films today, inevitably, I suppose, because they are the movies that are giving the movie theater industry and Hollywood in general a much-needed midsummer boost, Oppenheimer and Barbie. And to the benefit, I think, of both films, they opened on the same day, and people have been treating them as if they were one phenomenon. People have been calling it Barbenheimer. Which one are you going to see first? And that kind of thing. Actually, the two movies in most ways could not be more different. They are not the same movie. They are wild departures from each other. And in fact, they are competitors with each other because they opened on the same day. That said, they've been getting a lot of people to come and see them. Barbie has been getting by far the hugest box office, but maybe one reason for that is that it's a little under 2 hours long, whereas Oppenheimer is a full 3 hours long, which means not only are maybe people a little reluctant to maybe sit down for a three-hour movie all of a sudden, but movie theaters can squeeze in fewer showings each day. So all of these things play into the box office sweepstakes. That said, both are worth talking about. I don't think, by the way, either one is a great movie. There's a little spoiler, but they're both interesting phenomena in their extremely different ways. So let us begin with Oppenheimer. Oppenheimer is the latest movie from Christopher Nolan. And he is known for, I mean, he's made some movies which are fairly small scale projects like Memento, which I think is probably his best movie ever. Also movies on a very gigantic scale, such as Inception and Tenet and Interstellar and now Oppenheimer, which again is not only 3 hours long, but it was actually made basically to be exhibited and seen in IMAX. Now, I actually drove out of town and went to an IMAX theater and saw it that way. I'm not sure if it was really worth the drive. I don't think gains all that much probably from the IMAX format, but I saw it that way. The way that Chris Nolan really thinks that it should be seen is in 70mm IMAX, which is a gigantic, cumbersome process where you need a forklift just to lift up the movie and transport it over to the projector, and it just an enormously huge thing. I will mention, and I've actually spoken with Chris Nolan very briefly about this general topic, he is a strong believer in film as being on film, not all this digital stuff that is pretty much taken over nowadays for both filming and showing films. He's against that. Now, of course, most movie theaters now show things digitally. But he, if you stay till the very end of those 3 hours of Oppenheimer, you will see it says this movie was begun and finished on film. He's very proud of that. And in fact, he's kind of a real purist in this. He believes that if people see too many movies digitally instead of projected, you know, made and projected on film, people will lose the educated eye that can really tell the difference. Well, you know, I've been in the business of writing about movies as a film critic and teaching about movies as a film professor for decades and decades. And to me, it really usually almost always makes really little difference whether you're seeing something on digitally or on film. But, you know, I respect Chris Nolan and Quentin Tarantino, another one, and a handful of others who are really purists in this department. That's fine. They actually make movies, and they certainly have their point of view, and they're entitled to it. So all of this is just a very long-winded way of my saying, I think it's perfectly okay, folks, if you go out and you see it on digitally projected. Okay by me. I'm not really sure it gains all that much from the IMAX format. That said, now let's talk a little bit bit about Oppenheimer as a movie. It is a movie about the very real life figure of J. Robert Oppenheimer, a fascinating figure in American history and world history. He was the person who was tapped when he was still just in his late 30s to head the Los Alamos laboratory where the very first atomic bomb was developed. Now, before that, of course, he was a genius in physics, in the most advanced kinds of physics. He was a friend of Albert Einstein's, all this sort of thing. But then he was brought in to run the Los Alamos lab and to develop the first atomic bomb, and he ran the whole thing. He was in charge of the personnel and in charge of really every aspect of the whole thing. So that's one thing that the movie Oppenheimer deals with. It shows us how all this came about, his rivalry with a bureaucrat played, by the way, very nicely by Robert Downey Jr., and his relationships with a certain general played by Matt Damon and various other people, including the women in his life, one of whom is played by Emily Blunt, and so forth and so on. So we get that his coming in and running the Los Alamos lab and developing the first atomic bomb. The other part of the movie, and this being a Christopher Nolan movie, these things are all sort of intercut with each other. It's not a linear movie that moves from the beginning to the end. It jumps around in time a great deal. But the other thing in the movie, which is main thing, which is intercut all the way through, is what happened to Oppenheimer after World War II, which is that he was called on the carpet for his left-wing associations that he had back in his early days, in his youth, in his time at Princeton, you know, when he was a young person. He gave money to the Spanish Civil War that in order to make sure it got to the right people over in Europe, he donated through Communist Party channels, that kind of thing, which gave him these left-wing associations, which, of course, in the McCarthy era were death to anybody. That is, you know, political death and maybe career death, not physical death necessarily. But that's the other part of the story, and about how after World War II was over, he lost his security clearance. He was declared a threat to the United States and lost security clearance. It was extremely humiliating for him and ended his life. Put the whole last part of his life under a shadow that he was not obviously at all happy about. In fact, he was very melancholy about. So those are the two threats of Oppenheimer: his developing the first atomic bomb and his getting into trouble for having been apparently pink, not red. That is to say, he was sort of a socialist type, but he was not a real communist, but getting in trouble for that and then losing his security clearance and being under this cloud in the last part of his life. Now, how is all this told in the movie? It's a well-acted movie. Cillian Murphy plays Oppenheimer. I'm not a big fan of Cillian Murphy, but he does a very, very good job of playing the part. The other people I mentioned, Robert Downey Jr., Matt Damon, Emily Blunt, other people, Florence Pugh, they're all good. They all do a good job with their roles. I don't think there's any spectacular acting in it, but it's nicely done. The structure of the movie cuts back and forth. It's not really confusing. I think if you pay attention, you'll get the gist. You'll get what's going on. One thing I really wish that there were a great deal more in the movie was talk, and there is some talk about it. I don't mean this is neglected, but that I wish that there were a great deal more of the moral dimension of what does it mean to have created the atomic bomb and the horrible destructive power. Yes, it was Harry S. Truman, the president, who decided to drop the bomb on two military targets. They weren't, excuse me, military targets, civilian targets in Japan, and that probably did bring World War II to an end a bit sooner, but it's being debated to this day whether that saved lives or whether it was just a horribly immoral thing to do, to drop the bombs on cities instead of doing some sort of demonstration. This is discussed in the movie a bit, and we definitely get Oppenheimer's sense after all this is done that he, in his own words, had blood on his hands. But I wish that the movie had dwelt even more with that in its 3 hours and maybe taken away a little bit of time from some of the other elements in it. That said, it's a reasonably entertaining movie. It's an awfully long movie. I recommend seeing it. It's an interesting portrait of a certain period in American history. I will mention there are some errors in it. At one point, for example, there's a little debate between Oppenheimer and another character about whether the correct translation of a famous phrase in anarchist circles is property is theft or ownership is theft. And they debate which Karl Marx actually wrote in the original Russian. And Karl Marx didn't write that at all. It was Proudhon, a French anarchist writer. Also, a friend of mine tells me, whose parent, one of the parents, is a Dutch speaker, that when Oppenheimer is allegedly speaking Dutch in the movie, he's actually speaking German. So, hey, a little bloopers like that, you would have thought they would have cleared up the Marx quotation. But these are just cables, little tiny points. It's an interesting movie. See it, if only to get a little better hand on this important episode in American history. And now, as the Monty Python comedy troupe used to say, for something completely different. Barbie is the new movie from Greta Gerwig. She is an actor. I don't think she's a terrific actor, although she has a cult of people who think she's absolutely marvelous. And she's also a pretty good filmmaker. Her last movie was Little Women, very, very classically made, done very correctly in the old Hollywood style. And it was a good movie. It was very, very well done. Barbie is different. It is a total over-the-top absolute fantasy, and yes, it is about Barbie dolls. So here is what Barbie is about. Here is Barbie, and she lives in Barbie Land, and all the people around her are Barbie dolls, except for the occasional Ken doll, including Ken himself. And all the Barbies, they have slightly different personalities, but basically they are all identical. They all have the same big smiles on their faces. They are all living in the same dreamland of fantasy, and nothing ever goes wrong, and everything is always perfect. And that's, of course, the way Barbie dolls are supposed to do. However, Barbie, somehow or other, starts going a little bit off in her psychology. At one point, she asks some of the others if they ever think about death. Good Lord, what a question for a Barbie doll to ask. And of course, the answer is probably going to be no, because they're Barbie dolls and they don't really think much at all. So, you know, even in this fantasy world, they don't seem to think much at all. They just live their perfectly happy, idealized little lives. And then there is Ken, the Ken doll. And he is a little bit discomforted throughout, because Barbie just has to live her ideal days in perfect ways all the time, whereas Ken, all he really wants to do is to be noticed and seen by Barbie. At one point, he asks her sort of on a date, and she says, well, come to my place. And he says, oh boy, can I? And she says, sure, we're having a great big party. And it turns out there's a gigantic party going on, which he didn't even know about. In other words, she has her own life. She doesn't really need him. And yet there he is, and he is so desperate to be in her life. So anyway, the little conflict between Barbie and Ken, but more interesting is that Barbie has to somehow overcome this difficulty that she's got into. Her whatever sort of a brain a Barbie doll has is not working quite exactly right. So she goes to another Barbie. And of course, there's all the different kinds of Barbies that exist now. You know, the Dr. Barbie and the lawyer Barbie and this Barbie and that Barbie. She goes to Weird Barbie, who is sort of an outcast because she is weird. And she asks for some advice. And Weird Barbie says to our Barbie, Poopo, by the way, is known as Stereotypical Barbie, well, you have to go into the real world and confront the people at Mattel and ask them what's going on. Mattel being, of course, the toy company that makes the Barbies. So that is what the main thrust of the story is. Barbie, with Ken in tow, goes into the real world to deal with Mattel, and she ends up dealing with the head of Mattel, played by Will Ferrell, and all kinds of complications ensue there. They are, of course, comic complications. Now, interestingly, the movie Barbie was sanctioned, that is, it was okayed by the Mattel company. And apparently what Greta Gerwig did was she got them to okay it enough for her to proceed and make the entire movie. And then there were some things they weren't 100% happy with, but, you know, now the movie is there and it's out and they sort of have to live with it. And the movie is to some extent critical of Mattel, just a little bit, more critical of the Barbie phenomenon. At one point, Barbie encounters a real little girl in the real world who basically calls Barbie dolls fascists because they're all telling little girls in the real world how they ought to look and how they ought to act and how they ought to behave. So there are things like that in it that apparently didn't please the Mattel company very much. Then again, the movie was okayed more or less by the Mattel company, and they're certainly living with it now that it's out there. And I think that that's maybe a part of the problem. The movie had to sort of soft pedal its what might have been more interesting intellectual dimensions because they couldn't risk crossing the Barbie, the real life Barbie company, too much. That said, the very beginning of the movie is absolutely sensational. It is a parody of 2001: A Space Odyssey, and it involves the smashing gathering of a bunch of old-fashioned pre-Barbie dolls. And I thought it was just terrific. The rest of the movie isn't quite as good as that, although it's mildly enjoyable in its own way. Now, everything in Barbie Land is absolutely fantastical. I think that this movie Barbie is even more fantastical than the current Wes Anderson movie, Asteroid City, which is pretty darn fantastical in creating a totally artificial world. Barbie is so full of pinkness that one critic who I like, Anthony Lane in The New Yorker, said that watching the first hour is like being waterboarded with Pepto-Bismol. Everything is pink. Pink, pink, pink everywhere. Oh, you can't get away from the pink. And the movie is like that to a large extent. It's sort of a stunt in a way. I kind of enjoyed it. It throws a lot of barbs out at the idea of patriarchy, which certainly deserves all the barbs you can throw at it, even I say that, even though I'm a man. So it has its pleasures to think about, but mainly it's just a great big over-the-top fantasy. I don't think little kids will know what to make of it. It is very, very adult in a lot of its talk, for example, about patriarchy. But kids will probably enjoy the, you know, silly look of it, and adults might enjoy those sort of patriarchal little jokes and comments. And it has a very strong feminist point of view, which is nice to see in a Hollywood movie anyway. So Oppenheimer and Barbie, I would say certainly opt for Oppenheimer. Barbie is fun in its own sort of goofy and totally over-the-top and unreal way. And in any case, have a good time at the movies. It's a good time to go. And that is my two-movie story for this week.
For which we thank you, as always, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Oppenheimer and Barbie.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.